This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:06 in the evening. Now, our next story is about refugees and work. A think tank says we could see great economic and financial boons if we allow refugees here to work. So for IDEAS, or the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, it's an obvious next step because according to them, we have a good record in providing a safe haven for those in need. Now, in their research, they estimate that refugees could contribute over 3 billion ringgit to our GDP through spending and contribute about 50 million ringgit in tax returns by 2024. And speaking of which, Pakatan Harapan's manifesto had promised to ratify the UN's 1951 Refugee Convention and grant refugees the legal right to work. And I guess this is then a conversation of we have the, if we do go through with this, we have the labour force ready, but would Malaysian companies necessarily be engaged in this same process of wanting to hire a refugee? And, you know, we, when it comes to groups like, in this case, it's hard to have this conversation, whether that, in some cases, the argument is that it takes away jobs from locals.
That's the traditional argument, isn't it? I'm really sorry, but by the way, I have an incredibly squeaky chair, and I'm trying so hard to not bring that up.
Just stay still, Ken.
Stay still. Yeah, that is the argument, isn't it? They're going to come over here, they're going to take our jobs, and they'll reduce wages as well because they will be so much more competitive in their prices, and it's a real concern. It's a cultural concern. It may not be economically justified, but this is what people will think. I mean, I was in Britain during the time when they made the fateful Brexit vote, and that was all about foreigners not being like us and taking our jobs. It's unjustifiable, and the statistics and the facts prove that to be completely wrong. But if that's what people think, then that's what people think.
I think it's the right step to do, though, if we do go through with this, because a lot of the refugees are already working informally. If we do grant them legal status to work, it grants them protections, it grants them assistance that they could just get. Right now, they face challenges like their pay getting withheld and them being underpaid as well. So in the long run, economically, this is an excellent idea. Yeah. And also just from the basis of human rights, great.
Yes, I mean, I guess it would just make legitimate what's already happening at the moment. As long as Malaysians are okay with it, and I would say that Malaysians, by and large, are very accepting and understanding of these things. Of you know, foreigners, because a lot of these foreigners could so easily look like Malaysians. I mean, not exactly like, but you know, close. It makes sense. This is an Asian, a Southeast Asian melting pot, so we've had many people come here over the years.
So we're joined now by Deborah Henry, who is co-founder of Fuji School, an education hub for refugee children in Malaysia. Deborah, thanks for joining us. What can you tell us about the types of challenges that refugees face in Malaysia in trying to earn an income?
So because outside of UNHCR's card, that is a form of documentation for them, because they're not recognized as refugees, elements of protection for them, access to services, access to opportunities are not available. So on one hand, you have, according, I think, to the UNHCR statistic, about 160,000 refugees registered who have UN cards. However, kids can't go to school, so they are denied access to education, and their parents, adults, can't earn an income to be able to take care of their families. So you have a very interesting situation because they're here in our country and they're not living in camps. They're urban refugees, so they're living in the city and in different states, in Penang and Johor, but they're not able to be part of the workforce formally and contribute. And so because we're not including them in the system, we're not including them in absorbing them into our workforce, and because they are here, like, it's only natural, and I think any human being, whoever they are, would do this, is your survival mode kicks in. And survival mode kicking in means you need to take care of your family. You need to put food on the table. You need to have a shelter. You need to be able to try to send your kids to some school. And you need to be able to earn some money in order to do all those things. And that's when refugees work perhaps in the black market, or they work informally in some pasamalam, some night markets, day markets, in sort of smaller, in more informal businesses, or perhaps they work from home. So various different means to be able to earn an income. And it comes down to this global phenomenon happening right now, which is we have to stop building walls and we have to start building bridges. And I quote something that former Deputy Minister of Turkey said, Mr. Mehmet Şimşek. He said that Turkey chose to invest in global peace and Turkey chose to recognize the human spirit. And they knew that refugees were going to remain in Turkey for many, many years. Ignoring the situation would not help anyone. It would not help their local citizens. It would not help the refugees. It would not be good for the economy. So this leads me to my point on going back to legal work rights, is that because people are basically handicapped and they're not able to do certain things, refugees rely a lot on charity and donations. So that's where the Malaysian public has mobilized so much. We've got such a generous Malaysian public that have given so much to refugee communities here, starting over 100 schools, raising funds, organizing all forms of fundraisers to support various refugee communities. But what if refugees were allowed to work legally, brought into the system, formalized into the system, and allowed to go seek jobs? What would that mean? They earn an income. They could perhaps be taxed. They would also then be able to take care of their families. They would contribute to our economy. And they wouldn't be surviving on handouts and on donations and victims of their situation. That would change.
If there was strong political will and refugees were granted the right to seek employment, how do you see them contributing to the Malaysian economy?
Well, I would say that there have been two pilot projects that have been rolled out. One has been in the plantation industry and one has been in construction. The construction pilot project, I believe, was quite successful, whereas the one in the plantations did not really work out. And I think it's very important to remember that refugees are not a homogenous group. They're not a single type of people. Just like all of us citizens of this country, we're not the same. We have different backgrounds, different stories, different life paths. A refugee comes from various different countries, different racial backgrounds, religious backgrounds, different education attainment levels. So some have graduated, some have never been to school, some have got degrees, some have PhDs, some are doctors, some are farmers. You've got a very diverse range. You know, put yourself in someone's shoes. If you were a doctor or a teacher back home and you come here, perhaps you don't want to be doing a certain type of job. You know, perhaps you feel you can contribute more to the country, to the economy, and for your children. And secondly, I think for me, I think it's very important that when we talk about legal rights to work, I do think that it should be open to every sector. I don't think we should be picking one or two sectors. I think as pilot projects, perhaps that's a way of evaluating and analyzing the situation, but refugees should be allowed to pretty much work in all sectors. But of course, put in, you have rules and regulations that they need to abide by, like any other citizen of a country, and I think allow people to get retrained. There are a few big multinational companies in this country that hire over 4,000 or 5,000 Malaysians to work in their companies. I think many of them would be more than happy to hire refugees in their companies, and they're happy to train them. They're happy to do English courses, Malay courses, to be able to help them assimilate into the system. And I've seen this in companies in America, in other countries as well, and they've been very, very successful. You know, these are potential. Einstein was a refugee. What happens if Einstein had not been resettled in America? What would the world look like today without his gift and his genius, right? And so it's also opportunities for refugees to be able to go to college and to university to study. And like our social enterprise that we run, Fujila, we make jewelry and other fashion accessories. And we, too, work with some of the refugee youth, and we help train them in how to make jewelry. They learn how to run a business. They learn entrepreneurship skills. And these are very valuable skills, soft skills and hard skills, that they can put to other things in their life as they move on in their life.
What would you say to locals who are perhaps in their own ways struggling to cope with earning a living and feel threatened by the possibility of refugees taking away their jobs and their opportunities?
Well, I'd like to also once again highlight the Turkish minister. And this was also a concern in Turkey. You know, you have 4 million refugees coming to Turkey. Of course, the local population would feel perhaps a threat. They would feel nervous. How are these foreigners coming here? Are they going to take our jobs? Are they going to change our lives? And I mean, of course, there will be challenges, and refugees have already been here. You know, they're already working anyway. They're already living in our urban areas anyway. They exist. They still have to pay rent one way or another. So that's already happening. We forget and think that it's not happening. They are already looking for jobs. But also, like you pointed out, there is real concern. And this is where the government needs to step forward and through proper integration and assimilation programs to also assure the local population that it's not going to be at their expense, that this can be a win-win situation for all. And in the case of Turkey, the minister highlighted that when Syrians were allowed to start their own businesses, they started 6,000 new businesses, which created more than 55,000 jobs in Turkey since 2011. So I think what's very important for us to highlight is human emotion is a very powerful thing. And very often we form opinions based on emotion and based on misinformation, and we do not form opinions based on fact. So we need to look at the statistics. We need to look at what's happening on the ground and facts to be able to come up with policy and framework, not someone's emotional response to a situation, because very often that's not accurate. And there's so much misinformation on the ground right now that people say, oh, someone's going to take my job. But is that really true? And very often we have so many economic migrants here doing all the jobs that very often us Malaysians do not want to do anyway. So this is something that we need to yet again do more research on, evaluate the situation and make decisions. But my point is that I don't think, and it will be at the expense of the Malaysian citizens. It can be a win-win situation for all if it's done right. But ignoring the issue, not confronting the issue and hoping it's going to go away has not worked. Since I've been doing this for the past 10 years, it's not brought anything positive. And so I think we only really have one choice right now, and that is to confront this head on. It's to really sit around with all the parties at the table and to really have solid, concrete conversation about this. And of course, the emotional aspect is when we go to the ground, we meet with Malaysians, we meet with refugees, we run programs that bring people together, have friendly football games with each other to build trust. And when you meet a person face to face, the human connection, the human touch changes everything. Talking about refugees and talking about statistics is great and it's necessary, but we need to put a human face to the numbers. We need to understand the person's story, what they go through, their challenges. And when people come to Fuji School and meet our families, meet the students, hear their stories, hear their names, listen to their ambitions and their goals and dreams, they're convinced, they understand why we do what we do, and they too want to help. They too say, of course, refugees, like any human being, should not be deprived of basic human rights. And it's a very sad thing that they're sitting in Malaysia, and to a large degree, we don't want to allow that.
So with the limitations that refugee children in Malaysia are facing, what are the students at Fuji School able to work towards in terms of their goals and ambitions?
You know, as much as we've not legalized refugees and we've not done so much more that we should be able to do as a country, I have students who say to me today, they say, Malaysia welcomed me, Malaysia welcomed my family, and Malaysia saved me. And I can go to school here because for many years, remember, refugees back in their home country, especially those coming from war and conflict, their children have not been in school for many years. And so they go to school in Malaysia and they say, I can go to school here. Now I have dreams. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a teacher. And that's such a special thing. And to think that they formed their dreams, they formed their ambitions in Malaysia, that to me as a Malaysian, it warms my heart. That makes me proud to be Malaysian. And wherever these kids go in the world, wherever they end up resettled and whatever they do with their life, to know that we, as a country, we played a part in shaping this child's life, shaping this child's future, is such a special and such an important thing. And we need to be able to measure that and touching someone's life like that, I think, is such an important story.
Deborah, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Deborah Henry, co-founder of the Fuji School. If you'd like to volunteer or contribute in any way, you can find more information about Fuji School and the other projects that they're working on their Facebook page or on their main site, which is payong.org. That's payong.org. Our message here from Jonathan, who says that the common misconception is that foreign workers would take away our jobs and so on. But the truth is that many Malaysians don't want to do these jobs. Therefore, many employers have no choice but to look outside for workers.
Yeah, this is true the world over, isn't it? And if they didn't do that job, I don't know what would happen to this country. Mm. There are so many sectors that are reliant, but we're talking about migrant workers, but as opposed to refugee workers. But whole sectors would collapse without them.
Cam, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm being dismissed now, am I?
Yeah, yeah? for now, not forever, just for now.
All right, because I've been here for the last 6 days or something.
6 days? It's been three.
Okay, but I was three days before that. So, and now Lynn is going to be back tomorrow.
No, on Thursday. Tomorrow's a holiday for everyone.
Oh, my God.
And a holiday for you too.
Yes, thank you. Fortunately. But it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Likewise. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.